Good afternoon. This is Juno Afternoon. I'm your host for today, Andy Klein, on this rainy, finally rainy Friday after an amazing bout of great weather we've been having. Today we're going to get details on the upcoming SEAC bonfire and trivia night. We're going to be hearing about Alaska Wild Salmon Week and the Southeast Feast, which is happening next week. Lauren Anderson will be here to highlight Treadwell Arena's opening day and more happening there. And we're going to be learning about artist Mary Goddard's first Friday show, Tlingit Legends. That's all coming up, plus music and more. So much more here on this Friday edition of A Juno Afternoon. Stay tuned. We're going to hear all that right after National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. An Anchorage restaurant owner has found herself in the middle of a national debate involving trademark infringement and cultural appropriation. Alaska Public Media's Emily Russell explains.
Tasha Gehele is really proud of her new restaurant.
I may be a little biased, but I think we make some of the best poke in Anchorage.
Gehele opened Aloha Poke Stop in April. In Hawaiian, the word poke means to dice, cube, or cut. It's a staple of Gehele's native Hawaiian culture. Another staple of that culture, the word aloha.
When you walk into a business that has aloha and you have native Hawaiian family working in it, you can expect that kind of spirit, that kind of food.
But just weeks after opening, Gehele got a letter from the Chicago-based Aloha Poke Company, which is owned and operated by non-Hawaiians. Your use of aloha and aloha poke must cease immediately, the letter read. A letter similar to Kahele's was made public after it was sent to another native Hawaiian business owner. That spread online, creating a massive angry uproar. The Aloha Poke Company has since apologized on its Facebook page. To those who care about Hawaiian culture, it said, quote, "We want to say to them directly how deeply sorry we are that the issue has been so triggering."
You know, it's hard to accept an apology that doesn't sound so genuine and it leaves out a lot.
On top of that, the company is still insisting it owns aloha and aloha poke when used in connection with restaurants, catering, and takeout service.
Hawaii has been commercialized and colonized, and our culture has been appropriated in so many ways.
Customers, Kahele says, will come into her shop and ask about her traditional style of poke.
They're like, "Oh, the Hawaiian style poke, does that have pineapples in it?" And I'm like, "No, it has a very traditional nut base, kukui nut base, that makes it Hawaiian."
Kahele's restaurant shows off her traditional food and native culture. It's also a family business, which is why Kahele chose to rename her shop Lei's Poke Stop after her daughter. Lei is standing behind the register.
If at another time we have to fight anyone for the word Lei, that's
good luck.
Good luck. My daughter said good luck.
For National Native News, I'm Emily Russell.
A bill to enhance penalties under the Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act has been introduced by Representative Todd Rokita. The Indiana congressman says the bill would hold academics accountable to tribes when they violate federal law. Earlier this year, the federal government fined Hamilton County Parks for NAGPRA violations. Archaeologists reportedly excavated thousands of items, including artifacts and human remains, from a site without notifying tribes. The bill would increase penalties and move the enforcement from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to the Bureau of Indian Affairs. Portland State University announced this week it will offer a bachelor's degree in Indigenous Nations and Native American Studies starting this fall. According to the announcement, it's the first such major in Oregon after a years-long effort by students, faculty, and staff. A minor has been offered since 2002. The major was approved in June and will offer courses focused on tribal governance, sovereignty, and other Native issues. Students will also have the opportunity for community-based learning with tribes, Native organizations, and government agencies. The first graduates could receive degrees as early as spring or summer of next year. The Bozeman Daily Chronicle reports a plan to transfer bison from Yellowstone National Park to the Fort Peck Reservation in Montana by the end of the year may face a delay. A park official says the transfer is uncertain due to concerns if the bison will be disease-free. 89 bison are being quarantined. The tribes were reportedly left out of discussions. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is by Odawi Law Group, provider of Indian Law Solutions, and by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite System.
Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for more than 30 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com. Support by AARP. At AARP, we create and connect you to unique tools and programs to help you save money and tackle the issues that matter most to you, your family, and your community. What we do might surprise you. More at AARP.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is the Rock Dog. I host Cross Currents on 102.7 on your dial, FM. KRNN. I tune into KRNN because it represents one of the things we fight for in this country, freedom of expression. I love the variety of shows, a variety of personalities. Tune into KRNN 102.7 FM.
And welcome back to Juno Afternoon. Andy Klein, your host for today. And my first guest, we're calling down in Ketchikan, Haley Kardec with SEAC. Haley, you on the line there?
I am, Andy. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Thanks for taking time out of the day. We're just going to talk a little bit about some of the things coming up. Southeast Alaska Conservation Council has a couple of fun-sounding events. But I wanted to ask you first, Haley, just if you could, just for people who aren't familiar with the organization, what is SEAC? What's SEAC all about?
Absolutely. So SEAC is the Southeast Alaskan Conservation Council, and it's a grassroots conservation organization that works regionally in the Southeast on protecting the Tongass National Forest and the Inside Passage. So we really give people the information and tools that they need to take action and help Southeast Alaskans protect this really special place that we all love.
So you've got a couple of fun things coming up. Tell me about them. We've got trivia night coming up. What's happening next week?
We do. So that's next Wednesday, August 8th, and that's going to be at 7:30 at the Imperial. And this is our third trivia night, which I've been designing the questions for, and we have some really fun topics. We're going to have geography and pop culture, some conservation questions, and this is really just a great opportunity for community members to get out and learn about some of the issues that we work on, as well as just express their love and knowledge of Southeast Alaska.
That's cool. So you have some special categories, Tongass-related categories, things like that?
We do. Yes, so the five categories we're going to have is we're going to have Southeast Alaska history, geography, and then we're going to have climate change, the Tongass National Forest, and the Inside Passage.
Wow. Okay. So there you go. Really, for people that are into those issues, man, this is going to be a good night for them.
It will be a lot of fun, and teams can be up to five people. So bring your friends, or come and make new friends and just meet a lot of great people in the community.
Yeah, that's always a fun thing to go play. Go play trivia. Yeah. Just one or two people, and just form a table with some other folks. That's always a cool way to hang out with people and meet people. Are there some prizes?
Yeah, so we're going to have some prizes. We're finalizing them. We're still in the stage of finalizing them, but you can guarantee there are going to be some fun awards for the winners of Trivia Night. So definitely come out and find out how much you know about Southeast Alaska.
That's
and also
cool.
Make some friends and win some cool gear. Yeah.
Sounds good. Okay, at the Imperial, that's Wednesday coming up on the 8th, Trivia Night. And then
Yep. You've
got a bonfire coming up too, huh?
Yes, this is actually our final bonfire of the season. We've had a pretty popular summer with this amazing weather and sunshine, and we had 80 people show up in the one in June, and this time it's going to be out at Auk Rec, and it starts at 6 p.m. and goes through 8 p.m. on the 16th of August.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I mean, you sort of can't miss with bonfires this summer, right? It's been pretty awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're going to have burgers we're going to be throwing up, some veggie burgers, salmon burgers. So people should bring food that they want to share and throw on the grill if they want. And it'll just be a beautiful night in Southeast Alaska, enjoying the scenery and good people.
That sounds great. So you're in Ketchikan now. I was under the impression SEAC was based just in Juneau, but do you have offices in other areas as well?
So we have board members in, or sorry, we have staff that are in Ketchikan and also in Haines right now.
Okay.
And we're down, we were just up at the State Fair up in Haines, and this weekend we're down at the Blueberry Festival. So if people are heading down there this weekend, definitely come by our booth and check us out.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, that's a great festival down in Ketchikan. That's a fun thing to go to.
Yeah, I'm very excited about it, and we're supposed to get some good weather coming through this weekend again, so it'll be a really fun time.
All right, cool. Well, anything else you want to let us know about issues that are ahead for SEAC right now or things that you're kind of on the front burner of what you're working on?
Well, I just wanted to mention that, so I'm the summer intern at SEAC for this summer, and I found this internship through the Alaskan Conservation Fund, Ted Smith Conservation Program, and I just think that's a really great opportunity for especially young people from Alaska, the Southeast, who want to learn more about protecting the ecosystems all over Alaska and learning more about working within an NGO. So that's with ACF, the Alaskan Conservation Fund, and I just really think that's a great opportunity for people to know about.
So ACF, if people search for Alaska Conservation Fund, they can find out information about how they might be the next person that could get on board as an intern with SEAC?
Absolutely, yes. And it's called the Ted Smith Conservation Internship Program. So if they go on ACF's website, it'll be on there.
Okay, cool. Well, Haley, thanks so much for taking time out of your Ketchikan visit there to let us know what's happening, and have a great time next Wednesday at Trivia, and then next August the 16th, 6 p.m. at Auk Rec, the last of the summer bonfires.
Great. Thank you so much for having me, Andy.
Okay, Haley, thank you.
Great. Take care.
Welcome back to Juno Afternoon. Andy Klein with you. And Aaron Heist has joined me from Salmon Beyond Borders. Aaron, thanks so much for coming in. I appreciate you being here.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, no problem. So let me, you've got a big week ahead of you.
We do.
Culminating in a really cool thing that we'll talk about in a minute. But first, let's talk about Salmon Week that's coming up.
Yeah. So August 10th is Alaska Wild Salmon Day. And we thought, you know, we kind of need more than just a day to celebrate wild salmon.
Beautiful salmon that we have, yeah.
Yeah, so at Salmon Beyond Borders, we're putting together a full week, and we reached out to businesses across Juneau, and one, just let folks know that we're celebrating salmon all week, and we hope they will too, and we have tons of businesses that are going to be featuring salmon specials at restaurants, and then salmon products at businesses, whether it's like a salmon skin wallet or salmon prints.
I have one of those. I have a salmon skin wallet. Yeah.
They're awesome. and then on top of that, we asked businesses if they'd be up for kind of taking that next step and donating directly to defending Alaska's wild salmon. And so Salmon Beyond Borders were a coalition of commercial fishermen, sport fishermen, guides, outfitters, Alaska Native tribes, and First Nations people over in BC. Nonprofit conservation organizations, concerned citizens, and we're all focused on one issue, which is essentially there is a mining boom that's happening in Canada. And there's over a dozen different proposed or active mines that are on the watersheds of rivers that flow from BC into Alaska. And so for us here in Juneau, especially, that means the Taku River. It means the Stikine River, and that means the Yunik River. So they're super important salmon rivers to us. 80% of Southeast Alaska's king salmon come from these three rivers that are actually produced in Southeast. So basically, we decided this week we're going to ask people to kind of pony up and really stand up and kind of shout for our salmon with the Salmon Beyond Borders campaign. And we've got 14 or 15 different businesses who have donated. And so they're participating in Alaska Wild Salmon Week. They're all displaying a sign in their windows saying this business supports Alaska's wild salmon. And so, for instance, COPA is doing a dollar for every salmon wrap that they sell. Salt is going to do a buck for every salmon special they sell. Lupo's doing something similar. We've got Deckhand Dave's. The distillery, Devil's Club Brewing Company, Pavitt's Health Center donated.
Cool.
Bear Creek Outfitters and the Alaska Fly Fishing Goods Shop. And that's sort of just the folks who are specifically donating. But like I said, we've got people all over town who are going to be celebrating salmon all week long.
So are there a few different events going on throughout the week that's happening too? Or is it just kind of like this kind of fun culminating event?
We've got kind of the one fun culminating event. So all these businesses will be featuring salmon throughout the week. And I forgot to mention Pier 49 also.
I knew you'd leave one out.
Right? But luckily
tough.
It came to me
You're
in time.
Doing it without notes. I know. It's amazing.
Yeah. So we're sort of building up throughout the week. And then, our big culminating event is Southeast Feast. And this is our fourth year. And we've done Southeast Feast every year slightly differently. It's a celebration, again, of sort of the seafood bounty of Southeast Alaska.
I really like the idea this year. This is a really fun idea with the multiple venues.
Yeah,
right? Yeah,
I really like it, too. I think it's going to be super fun. So we're doing it at both Devil's Club Brewing Company, which is the new downtown small brewery, and then the Amalga Distillery. And the businesses are pretty close to each other. And so it's going to be Friday, August 10th from 5 to 7:30 p.m. We're calling it sort of like a flexible social hour. And so if you buy a pre-sale ticket, it includes both venues, and you get one cocktail from Amalga, you get three oysters, which are going to be provided by Barnacle Foods, and they're also going to have their kelp pickles. And then you get one beer from Devil's Club and a salmon snack that's going to be prepared with Taku River Reds salmon and by Tyson Fick from Taku River Reds with some assistance from Hank Shaw, who is a visiting food blogger who's also doing an event, I believe, at the Brewery Depot on Saturday.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, so basically if you buy a pre-sale ticket at salmonbeyondborders.org, that includes everything. And you get a punch card when you show up. And so you have kind of the ability to float between the two venues, whatever strikes your fancy in the moment. We'll also have a limited number of tickets available at the door for each venue. And those will be $20 each.
Okay, cool. Wow.
Yeah.
Sounds like a lot of fun.
It's going to be a lot of fun.
Well, we'll get back to that a little bit more.
Yeah.
Talk to me about another issue that I think that Salmon Beyond Borders is involved in is the initiative everyone's talking about.
We're actually not really
involved in that.
Okay. No.
So, okay.
I mean, it's good to talk about it because
sure.
It's separate.
Okay.
So there is a ballot initiative on the general election ballot this year that's specifically around salmon habitat. For us with Salmon Beyond Borders, we're really focused on this issue of these Canadian mines on rivers that flow from BC into the US. So for us, it's actually a country-to-country issue. It's something that has to be handled on the federal level. So it's not really something that Alaska, we have a say in a way, like we get to express how we feel about this and encourage our federal elected officials to take action. But it's not something that Alaska can take like a very concrete step on.
Because these mines are BC mines.
They're BC mines, right. And they're in a different country.
Right, right.
And so we're really fortunate with this transboundary issue. Senator Murkowski has been a real leader, as has Senator Sullivan and Representative Don Young. This last fall, Governor Walker and Lieutenant Governor Malott sent a letter along with the full Alaska delegation to the Department of State, which is where we needed to direct our action. And so it's an interesting issue because it's pretty bipartisan. It's kind of hard not to feel strongly that our salmon are really valuable to Alaska, and we should be doing everything we can to encourage Canada to kind of ante up. Their own Auditor General cited the way that the mining companies have been regulated and that there's real concrete change that can be that can happen there on the BC side. They don't even meet the same levels of mines that we have here in Alaska.
Yeah, what are some of the specific requests and goals that you're looking for out of these out of these mines and out of the BC and Canada government?
I mean, I think the one of the clear ones is financial assurances. So that means that, you know, before these mines are approved, that they have to prove that they can pay for any potential cleanup that happens, or if the mine shuts down, that, you know, the finances are there to actually clean up the leftover mine waste. For instance, here on the Taku River, up in the upper part of the watershed, the Tusco Chief mine stopped operating about 60 years ago, and it's never been cleaned up. And that's purely because of the way that BC's laws work. So that's one concrete thing that British Columbia could do. You know, I think another big thing, and it's this is sort of getting a little nerdy and into the weeds, but just basic baseline water quality monitoring. So we understand exactly what the impacts are. You need several years of that kind of data. And so there's a couple of different tools that are out there.
The same sort of requirements we would ask from our mines, our local mines.
Exactly.
And that we require to make sure that they're being operated correctly and safely and and those kinds of things. We're asking for those kinds of assurances because they affect our watersheds.
Exactly.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And there's a treaty between Canada and the U.S. saying, you know, that neither country will do anything to damage the other country's water. And so there's a structure there for us to use. There's a body in existence that we can appeal to. But we really have to actually do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, like I said, we're really fortunate in that a lot of our elected officials have stated support. As far as it goes for Salmon Beyond Borders, we just need to get louder and louder and louder and pull more people in. And so we're working with partners down in Montana and Washington who are facing similar situations in the rivers that flow from BC into those states. And we're really pushing for our elected officials to speak louder and make sure that this is clearly an issue that Alaska is a leader on rather than waiting for BC to take the initiative. We want Alaska to be really pushing for our salmon.
Now, getting back to this event, this fun event. So how do folks get pre-tickets and things like that?
SalmonBeyondBorders.org, where you can look for us on Facebook. That all links together. And we're just selling them online. And it's $35 for a pre-sale ticket that includes both Devil's Club and Amalga.
And it's
locations.
Cocktails and oysters.
Yes.
And then beer and salmon.
Beer and salmon.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
that
so
sounds right.
I think it's going to be great. And then, so it's from 5 to 7:30. So you kind of have your delicious drinks and snacks and sort of appetizers. And then you can go out and go to one of these restaurants that's participating in Alaska Wild Salmon Week and have a delicious salmon entree. And still kind of keep giving back to those salmon that we love.
Yeah, yeah. And feeding off the bounty that they provide us every single year.
Exactly, yeah.
And we want to keep coming every single year. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and I think for us right now, I think everybody's sort of been feeling the worry that we have right now about what's happening with our salmon returns. And so I think this is just a really cool way to, one, celebrate our salmon, but also give back and, you know, make sure that we're doing everything we can to keep them coming back.
Yeah. Well, Aaron, thanks for the work you're doing on it. And sounds like it's going to be a blast.
For sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So a great time to think about the salmon and give thanks to them and eat a few of them.
Yeah.
Too. Yeah.
Totally. That's
right.
How I like to celebrate
That's
salmon.
That's right. All right. Well, Aaron Heist from Salmon Beyond Borders, thanks so much and have a great event.
Yeah,
sounds like it's
going
to
so
be
much.
Great. Okay. Coming up right now, here comes Bird Note.
This is Bird Note. Does this call of the common loon bring to mind a summer visit to northern lakes with sunny blue skies? If so, you've probably heard loons in Alaska, Canada, northern Minnesota, or New England. This yodel call is given by a male on its breeding territory. The call of the common loon during winter is quite different from the summer breeding call. The prolonged, unmodulated tone sounds somewhat like a wolf's howl, doesn't it? We identify this as the whale call, reflecting its mournful qualities. Both males and females give this call, for example, when they want to reestablish contact after becoming separated. Common loons have another, more cheerful, tremolo call. This undulating tone, tagged the laughing call, is given while flying. When winter ends, common loons return to their breeding territories. Once back to those shining northern lakes, the males will again launch their yodel. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
NOAA Fisheries asks you to help prevent sea lion entanglements. Please remember to lose the loop. Prevent nooses by cutting any loops before discarding in the trash. Stash the trash. Keep plastic trash out of the ocean. Keep the sea entanglement free to prevent injury and death to marine wildlife. To report an entangled marine mammal, call the Alaska Marine Mammal Stranding Network at 1-877-925-7773. This message brought to you by NOAA Fisheries.
Welcome back to Juno Afternoon. Andy Klein with you, and Lauren Anderson and Colin Monahan have joined me from Parks and Rec. And Colin is the new aquatics manager, right? Fairly new, I guess. You've probably been in town for a little while now.
Yeah, just a few weeks.
Oh, yep. Okay. Yep. Okay. Yep. Great. And Lauren heads up the Treadwell Ice Arena, which is an exciting time right now, right?
It sure is.
Yeah.
Yep.
Getting close to opening.
We are. We open on Monday, August 6th, and we're really excited. We kick off the day with a Planet Hockey. It's a hockey camp for youth, and that'll be going on all week from Monday through Friday in the mornings. And then there is an adult session, which there's still openings available for those adults, all abilities that want to come out and join Steve with Planet Hockey, and that'll be from 6 to 8 on Tuesday for the adults.
Cool.
And then on Monday, we're really excited. Second Wind Sports is sponsoring a free open skate, and this is from 3:30 to 5 o'clock. And this is the second year that they've been sponsoring this event, so we're really excited. It's the first open skate of the season, so we hope y'all can come out. Skates are included. And come out and skate with us.
Now, you were saying that you've been making ice all week, right?
We have been, yes.
So tell me the process of making ice in an ice arena like this. It's fairly complicated, right?
Well, there are a variety of ways to do it. And the way we do it here in Juneau and at Treadwell is you have to freeze. We have a cement slab. And then we build the ice on top of the cement. And underneath the cement is a refrigeration system. And they're kind of coils that have refrigeration going through and keeping things cold. And so we have two compressors that kind of run that cycle and keep the cement cold, which then keeps the ice cold. And we have to cool the slab down to between 16 and 18 degrees. And then once it's cold enough, then we can start laying water. And we basically use this large hopper that's got about 100 gallons of water in it. And we pull that around. It's got front sprayers on it. And we pull that around and put what's called a bond layer. And it's just water down. And that adheres to the cement. And then that's what we did on Sunday. And then on Monday.
And that's just a very thin layer.
It's just a thin layer. Yeah, it is.
Thin layer.
Exactly.
Yeah,
yep.
Okay.
And then on Monday, we lay the white paint. And that's how we make the rink white. And so it's a powder that we put into that hopper. And we mix it up with that those gallons of water. And then we do three layers of white paint. And then
that's interesting. Did you know that?
I didn't know
that. I know. I never knew that. So it's not, I always just assumed that that was clear ice laid out over like
a painted cement
thing or something.
And some rinks do uh-huh, that, but
yeah.
We don't do that.
Okay.
We actually put the paint, white paint on, and then we hand paint. So then you have to seal that all in with just a clear coat of water.
Okay.
And that takes a couple layers. And then on Tuesday, we actually painted the ice with the lines. And we have two sponsors, Hecla and Airlift Northwest. And they have in-ice logos.
Like stencils or something?
Yeah, exactly.
That they put? Okay.
And so we put those in. And then we have a group of volunteers that come in and staff that paint the lines. And actually on Monday, we have to measure everything out before our volunteers get there on Tuesday and mark out all the lines so that they can basically paint in between the
wow.
lines.
And then how many after the paint layers, then how many layers do you have to get up to where you've got it, where it's your skate, you know, it's really skatable surface?
Well, it needs to be about a half inch thick.
Okay.
Yeah. And so it takes a while because it's kind of like you're putting layer upon layer, like a piece of paper upon
right.
paper until it's about an inch. So it takes a while. It's quite a process, and we've been working.
Do you know about how many gallons of water it takes?
Oh, gosh. I don't. But
okay.
just the white paint, we were putting 80 gallons of water down at a time.
Yeah.
So it adds up. We use a lot of water.
Right.
Yeah, and so now we just were able to put the Zamboni on the ice, and then that will help really build the ice up.
And you said you have a new Zamboni?
We've got a new Zamboni.
Right.
We're so excited. It's the first new Zamboni that we've had. We're going into our 16th season, so we're really excited, and we'll work a little bit this weekend just building up the ice so that we're ready to skate.
All right. Well, Colin, you've been patient. You've got lots to talk about with the pools as well. So thanks for letting me. I just am so interested in this, but I'm going to ask you more questions
sure.
about that in just a minute. But what's going on at some of the pools? We've got Augustus Brown and then the pool out in the valley. And yeah, so.
Yeah. Well, thanks.
Yeah.
I got a couple things going on for the month of August. Couple closures are kind of wrapping up everything from the summer, so now we're kind of getting ready for the fall season.
And so do you have to kind of go through a basic like yearly maintenance, or like there's a maintenance thing so you close off and go
mm-hmm.
through a
yeah,
full
and we
cleaning
change.
And things like that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right.
And we change depending on what's going on. You know, now with swim season starting, you know, we have, you know, swim teams coming into our facilities, so changing a couple closure times with that. We have AGB. We are actually going to be closed on the 22nd. Of August from 7 a.m. to 3. So kind of a little project real quick that we're doing is we are actually removing two of the bleachers that have been there for quite some time, and we're actually going to put in pool covers, and that's going to be where the housing unit is, where the bleachers are. And these pool covers are actually energy-efficient pool covers, and it's an estimated 20% energy savings.
Wow. And it's just literally a cover that covers over the pool at night so that it
right.
maintains its temperature.
Yeah,
yeah.
And it kind of help, you know, the evaporation from escaping the pool itself.
Oh, also evaporate. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So then the chemicals, you know, we cut the cost for chemicals will help a lot. So,
oh, I see. Okay.
So, yeah, so August 22nd from 7 a.m. to 3, we will be closed. But we will be open that morning from 5:30 to 7 for all the early morning lap swimmers. And then other than that
will Diamond Park be open on during those hours then?
Yeah, they will be open during that time. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. And then DPAC, they are changing their maintenance time back to Mondays for swim season from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. So the pool will be closed every Monday from 1 to 3 p.m.
What's the kind of style pool as far as the chemical makeup of the pools that are run here? Is there a saline solution, or is it kind of pools are they?
So it's saline and salt, and they use different chemicals to make sure that it is great for the community to use.
Yeah. Right, right. And is that something that is sought after as far as like times and swim teams and meets and that sort of thing? Mm-hmm. Or does it even affect it? Or
it really doesn't have an effect on it. The only thing that really kind of affects with, you know, swim meets is the temperature. Typically, you know, with swim meets, you want to have a colder pool because if you think about it, you know, for swimming, if it's hotter, you're going to be able to feel yourself sweat, believe it or not.
Yeah.
I've been there.
Huh, and it's, really?
Yeah. You want to swim in a cold pool, definitely, if you're
competition-wise. Okay.
So, and that's, we actually do lower the temperature for meets.
What is the typical temperature, and then what's the temperature for meets?
So it's 80 to 82 degrees for the pools for recreation, but then they lower it down to 78. Does take a while. It is Deepak is about 250,000 gallons, so it takes a couple days to get it down to 78 degrees. But yeah,
I mean, I would have thought it was colder. Sometimes that pool seems cold to me sometimes when I get in that pool, you know. But that's interesting. Yeah, 78 degrees. Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, and the other thing that I'd like to kind of just discuss really quick, we do have a lifeguard course coming up on August 7th through the 18th. We are hiring at both pools as well. So if anyone is interested in, you know, taking this lifeguarding course and you want to make, some money, we're definitely always hiring for more lifeguards. And the class will be, like I said, the 7th through the 18th. The course cost is about $250.
Is that a required course in order to kind of be certified? Is
right.
That the idea?
You
okay.
Can't lifeguard unless you do have the, you know, your current on your certifications for that. That course will be Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday. And then we are doing, and it'll be 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. And we're actually doing the pre-courses Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays ongoing from 11 to 12 p.m. at Diamond Park.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
All right. Back to the Zamboni.
Yes.
I want to ask more about the Zamboni. Does having a new Zamboni make the ice better?
I don't believe so.
Okay.
It has a couple of new options that we didn't have before, but we're still trying to figure that all out. We just picked it up from AML on Friday. So some of you may out there in listening today, you may have seen us drive. It was driven onto a flatbed.
Okay.
And then we drove it across the bridge.
Didn't drive the Zamboni,
we
too.
Didn't. No.
That's a long trip.
You know, something else that was a common question while we were waiting for the tow truck at Alaska Marine Lines on Friday was, will it go faster because it's newer? And it won't go faster. That's not part of making better ice. Actually, the speed of it, you really don't want to go very fast. You're laying water down and scraping a little layer of the ice, and so speed isn't necessarily better.
Yeah,
for
I like watching a slow Zamboni.
Yeah,
it's nice. It's pleasant.
Yeah,
peaceful.
It is.
Yes.
We think so too. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. It's exciting to get that new kind of equipment in and know that you've got this great piece of equipment that's going to last for another 10 or more years. Yeah,
we hope so. That's the plan. Yeah, no leaks. We've had another
machine. How much does a new Zamboni cost?
Well, it's about just over $100,000 for a brand new Zamboni. We've been saving for the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
So we have an equipment replacement schedule within the city. And so a Zamboni is a piece of equipment that's on that schedule, so
I would expect that. It's like a big piece of farm equipment or something, right?
Definitely.
And
that included shipping from California.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
From the Zamboni makers.
Yeah, that's right. In Paramount, California. Yeah.
And are they the only ones that make the name Zamboni?
Yeah, that's their last name. It's a family name, Zamboni. Mm-hmm. Frank Zamboni.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea. That's where that came from.
Yeah, we did.
I don't know what I thought it came from. Obviously, it's a name. Yeah,
it is.
Yep,
it's a family name. And our first machine, ice resurfacer, is an Olympia. And actually, our Olympia is for sale. And that was our first machine. We actually got it from Calgary Hitmen. It was another hockey team in Calgary. And that was a used machine that we got in 2003. And it's a 1999 Olympia. And we're, If you're interested, please email me, lauren.anderson@juno.org, or give the rink a call, 586-0410. If you're interested, it's parked outside the rink right now, and we'll have to put it away for storage until we can find someone that's interested. It was on our surplus, and we didn't have any bidders, but so now we have a little bit more freedom to sell it. It's in good condition. They weigh a lot. Uh-huh. So it's not something you could just put out on Twin Lakes.
Yeah, what I was going to say, yeah. Probably not appropriate for lake or ponds. Yeah,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's a very specific buyer we're looking for here, someone that's
yeah,
or a reseller maybe, or someone that
yeah.
wants to maybe yeah,
but maybe another community in Southeast
sure.
or up in Canada may be interested. So we need to start spreading the word.
Yeah,
but yeah. So we're really excited to open on Monday and have our free open skate from 3:30 to 5:00. So come on out. We also have a back to school skate, which is going to be August 22nd, and that'll also be free, sponsored by the Douglas 4th of July Committee, and they are so supportive of Treadwell Arena. They were supportive when we first opened and getting fundraising before the rink even opened and get things going. And then Parks and Recreation has our Day of Play, which is another free event. And how that's designed is going from facility to facility, and you can get a ticket and win prizes. So people can go to the rink and go to the pools, and there are designated times. And that's on August 25th. It's a Saturday. So look for more information on that. And
yeah.
Yeah.
Lots of stuff. I mean,
we have lots of stuff.
Really
we're excited.
Cranking up this time of year. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
yeah August
great.
Is great for Parks and Recreation and our community.
Yeah. We'll have a great time doing it. Congratulations on the new Zamboni.
Thank
Congratulations
you.
On coming to town. We're yeah. glad to have you here.
Yeah,
yes,
thanks.
We
great
are.
To be
yeah.
Here.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
And so folks, check out, I guess, check out the CBJ Parks and Rec site to find out more information
sure.
on either
yep.
Treadwell or the pools.
Yep. Or just go directly to the Treadwell Arena or like us on Facebook. We've posted lots of pictures. If you're interested to see how we made the ice, we posted lots of pictures and time lapse so you can see kind of the process.
Oh, I'm going to watch that.
Yeah. Just like Treadwell yeah. Arena on Facebook. And
oh, very cool.
And the pools are Juno Aquatics?
JunoPools.org.
Yep. Okay, great. Well, thanks to both of you for coming in, and have a great season.
Thank
All
you.
All right.
Thanks.
And skating, yes.
Support for this programming comes from Chris Diamond, independent candidate for Alaska State House District 33. Paid for by Chris Diamond for House, P.O. Box 240210, Douglas, Alaska, 99824.
I just wanted to hear that song again. That's all. Andy Klein with you, back with you right now. And Mary Goddard has joined us, an artist who's going to be presenting her work for First Friday in the store at the APK. And Audrey Kohler is here from the store at the APK.
Absolutely.
So welcome to both of you. Thanks
Thank
for coming
you
in.
Thank you so much.
And let's talk about the store first. Let's talk about the beautiful new museum and library and archives building. And then there's this lovely, beautiful store that's exhibiting all kinds of interesting things, right?
All kinds of cool stuff. Yeah, we're located just right in through the lobby. We got a nice little shop there. We're featuring all kinds of local artists throughout Alaska, but we aim really heavily on making sure that the people who are in our shop are from Alaska and representing them as much as we possibly can.
Yeah, and it's beautiful work. You have works from Alaskan artists,
absolutely,
Native Alaskan artists, mm-hmm. and also just artists who are just interesting artisans working all different kinds of stuff. And I was there were these amazing guitars on the wall.
Yeah, we have
for instance.
Some really cool electric guitars by a local man named George Gress. Yeah. He was a teacher here for a long time, but he's making these beautiful guitars. The Man in the Woods is one made out of yellow cedar that's gorgeous, carved
with the
guitar.
Carved, yeah, remember that one.
It's
yeah.
great. Yeah.
A luthier.
Absolutely.
Yes.
They
don't get to say that word that often. But so, Mary, just for folks who haven't seen your art, do you work mostly jewelry? Is kind of where you work? What's your inspiration behind your jewelry, and how would you describe it to someone who hasn't seen it before?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I like to describe my jewelry as contemporary jewelry using traditional materials. And so I find that when I use traditional materials, it kind of grounds me or roots me back in my culture.
Sort of speaks to you in a way. Does it, when you look at a material, do you always have a design in mind, or does the material sometime dictate what you're going to do with it?
You know, sometimes I have a design idea and I get the material, and sometimes it takes me a while to come up with a design. I think this last year I worked with dentalium, and I had a big jar.
What is that? Dentalium?
Dentalium.
Oh, dentalium. What is that?
Dentalium was traditionally used as trading or as currency in Native cultures, and it's kind of like a mollusk shell.
Oh, cool.
And it's white. It's really pretty.
Oh, okay.
You'll see it on regalia. You'll see it in earrings. And
and in dentalium, because it looks like teeth almost? Is that dent or something like that? Is that why?
No, that's a really good question. I feel like there was probably something to that I read, but I'm not sure, but it kind of does. It's just long and narrow and skinny.
Okay.
And so, you know, that was an example of something that sat on my shelf for a year and a half before I made earrings, and I really had to make sure the idea that I had really worked together.
And
so it's a lot of experimenting.
Yeah.
It's exciting when you finally are inspired with your material and you're like, oh, I know what I'm doing with this now.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
So cool.
Does your work, are you sometimes portraying a story? Are you your show that you're showing at the APK is called Tlingit Legends, and so it makes me think that when you sometimes see totems and there's legend totems and they're talking specifically about telling a story. Does that work into your artwork?
Yeah. Tonight I'll be showing some pictures at the artist talk of the show that I did titled Tlingit Legends. And I picked that title because it kind of reminded me, it sounded like very fairy tale-ish. And so I just really wanted to incorporate some of the older stories, but in a way that I saw them, or the Tlingit stories that are mine. So that's kind of why I picked the title. And if you come tonight, you can see some of the images and pictures with the, you know, models using the jewelry. And
Tell me more about what specifically is going to be happening at tonight's show.
Yeah, so tonight, back in May, I did my first art show. And I brought in Crystal Hutelling from Palmer, Alaska, to do photos of jewelry I put together that kind of tells a story. And really, you know, I always think of Clinkets as really good storytellers. And I feel like I didn't really get that. So I tell my stories through my jewelry.
Oh, I love that.
So I'm hoping when people see my jewelry, it speaks to them that there's a story there. And those images, that's what I really wanted the images to do for my audience.
Yeah. Well, tell me about your training. How did you come to work in this art form?
My mother is an artist. She is a skin sewer and a basket weaver. And so I kind of grew up around the art a lot.
And were you, did you grow up here in Juneau? Or?
I grew up in Yakutat.
In Yakutat, okay.
Mm-hmm. And so I learned a lot of my art skills from my mother. And my teacher, Dave Galanin, he's the one who taught me form line artwork, carving in copper and silver. And so I kind of combined from both teachers, you know, what I've learned. You know, my mom's a basket weaver, so I weave spruce roots into my bracelets or into my earrings. And, you know, I try to make sure I use form line and, you know, do the stuff that Dave taught me and just kind of combine them together.
That's fascinating, cool. Actually, yeah. That you have these two disciplines that often are not, you know, that are often kept apart in a way, and that you're combining them.
Yeah.
To work with textiles and to work with those things, but also bring in other elements. And that's a really interesting way of approaching it.
Her pieces are really so beautiful. I always, you know, she's obviously in our store, and I just love her case. I always point it out when people come through. I'm like, oh, look at Mary's work. It's so beautiful.
There you go.
I love it.
Thank you very much. That
means that's an upsell.
Yeah.
Yes, that's good. Well done, yeah. And you work. The materials, you obviously work in copper. I mean, you're wearing a beautiful pair of copper earrings right now. And then is that an abalone backing to that?
Yeah, yep. Right. Abalone background. So, you know, that was the abalone I was really inspired by a lot of the older Clinkett photos. You see the woman with really large abalone earrings. Abalone was used on a lot of regalia. And I think just because abalone in itself is just beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
I guess doing Clinkett Legends was really the first time that I incorporated the really large pieces of abalone in my artwork. And so it's just kind of something new
yeah,
and fun for me.
Yeah. Have you gone in your kind of career of carving, have you gone from smaller to large? Or are you starting to work in larger format?
You know, that's a really good question. Yeah, because larger projects really seem so daunting. So, you know, some of my last pieces this year have included inlaying copper, carved copper into furniture. And I did that with another artist in Sitka. The year before, I did large copper devil club leaves that hung from a ceiling for an art installation. So, yeah, it's really fun to work in larger scale and then go back down to the tiny little earrings or
right.
necklaces. So, yeah.
So have you done other large? That's almost like you're really starting to talk more about sculpture rather than sort of jewelry work at that point. Have you done other sculpture work?
You know, not too much. I think those are pretty much my experimenting and the pieces that I've put out there. I'd like to continue on. I'm kind of consider myself a project person. So once I do one thing, I'm ready to move on to the next idea.
So, and that was going to be my next question. What are some of your next things that are bubbling away or that you're actually working on now? Are there things that you could preview for us that are coming
up? Film is in my background. I have a passion for film, and so I would like to incorporate that in some way. One of my ideas would be, I've always kind of had this idea where it'd be a talking totem, but really just where a totem pole kind of comes to life and you see the video. You know, like, so I have some different ideas that have been brewing for quite a while.
Thank you.
I don't have it done yet.
Soon.
That's something to work on, yeah. Well, what are the hours that this is going to, is this happening like you have to get out of here?
Tonight, yeah.
It's,
well,
you got to run over to the store, yeah.
So the museum is going to have free admission starting at 4:30 this evening, and Mary will be there, you know, as soon as we're done with this. We'll be back at the store.
Right.
But her talk is going to begin at 7 p.m. tonight.
Yep.
And we'll
correct.
Go till about 8 o'clock.
Yeah. And it's a, is this a talk that you've done before, or is this the first time you've put this together?
This is the first time I put this talk together. So I did the show in May in Sitka, where I actually had the really large canvas photos displayed with all the jewelry. And this is kind of a, I don't want to say sneak peek, because I'm actually showing you the photos, but it'll just be the real photos won't be displayed.
I see.
But I'll kind of talk about the process behind the show and the process behind the jewelry.
I see. Well, that's really really fascinating that it sounds like you're never quite satisfied with just one form of media in your projects. You always want to incorporate multiple things in all of your projects.
I really do. And it's the one thing that excites me, you know, from digital to film to, you know, the jewelry making.
So. Right, because most people would say, oh, I'm a jewelry maker. That's fine. But you're saying, well, I also want to photograph that jewelry, and I want to show it, and I want to tell the story, and I want to do those things. That's a fascinating way of looking at it. Where do you live now?
Currently, I live in Sitka,
okay.
And that's been my hometown for the last several years.
And do you have a workshop and that kind of thing there? And
I do.
Yeah.
It's just my husband had built me a little workshop, and so I have my own space just to work. And then I, you know, I'll travel or do markets and stuff. But
no storefront, any one place or anything like that?
Yeah. No storefront right now. I just sell in some stores throughout Alaska and Seattle, and that's about it right now.
Yeah, right. Well, that's awesome.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Okay, well, for those listening, if you're interested in meeting Mary and seeing some of her beautiful creations, and then also seeing this Tlingit Legends photo series, that'll be happening. The photo series presentation will happen tonight at 7, but the museum will be accepting folks for free starting
Absolutely.
At 4:30.
And the store will be open throughout the evening as well. And we are featuring Mary's artwork. So if you
could actually
pick up
take
some of
home
her work, absolutely.
A piece of
yeah.
this beautiful artwork. Yeah,
yeah,
that's
absolutely.
Awesome. Well, great to meet both of you. And thanks so much for coming in. Have a great show tonight. Once again, it's Mary Goddard. Tlingit Legends is the discover ancient stories through jewelry and photography. And that talk is happening tonight from 7 to 8 at the lecture hall. But the show is starting in moments from 4 to 7. And from 4:30 to 7, APK will be having folks come in through the museum for free. And that's an awesome opportunity
Absolutely.
To go check out the museum.
Yeah, yeah. It's
well,
great.
Thanks
yeah,
to both of you for coming
you.
In. Have a great show.
Thank you
thank
so
you.
Much.
Okay. That's it for Juno Afternoon for today. I'm Andy Klein, your host. Thanks so much for tuning in. And there's a little bit of rain in the forecast for today and tonight, and a little bit tomorrow. But Sunday is supposed to be mostly sunny, so look forward to that for Sunday. Have a great weekend, everyone.